All right, we ready?
Ready, yeah.
All right, good. So welcome to our first post-COVID training.
Yay. Woo!
So we haven't done one. The last training we did was the mastermind in, where were we? No. Scott, where were you, the mastermind?
Tahoe,
Lake Tahoe. In a blizzard, and then they shut the country down.
Yeah.
And we're like, maybe we can get an Uber to Oregon. That'll be a 9-hour drive. I wonder how expensive that would be. But we got home. Anyway, it's been quite a ride for the last few months, huh? I mean, probably the most devastating thing to happen to the country in my lifetime. I've never seen anything like this. But we are pulling out of it. The governor in this state yesterday released the restrictions for anything, for masks, for social distancing. So it's coming back to normal. I do got to tell you, and I'm not going to get political, but I drove across the country and I went through South Dakota, the only state that did not implement one preventative measure and had the lowest rate in the country. And I went through two major cities, and it was really weird because you're going through these cities and you're going, this is like normal here. And they're like, yeah, you're just like normal. So I think we're going to pull out of this, and I'm glad you're all here because we're going to help you pull out of it. So I just want to update on something. This happened while COVID was going on. Do you guys know what the Inc. 5000 list is? Inc. magazine puts out a list. It's not like the Fortune 500. That's the 500 most powerful countries in the world, I think. But this is the 5,000 fastest growing companies out of 28 million companies. And AMI just got their fifth Inc. 5000 award. Thank you. So why? I get asked that question a lot. Why do you guys grow? Why'd you grow so fast? Well, I think it's because of our focus. You can teach the same stuff and have two different focuses and get a completely different result. And our focus is, why are we here? Why are we here? To get patients well. That's the end. At the end of the day, that's what we're doing. And if we can't do that, I'm leaving. But we can do that, so I'm not leaving. Right, Ken? Yeah. So I'm going to share with you some things that we should know and we should confront. Now, some of you have seen me talk before, and you've seen some of these stats. Bear with me, because a lot of you haven't seen these stats, and we need to know these stats. If we're going to change healthcare, which that is the motive of AMI, to make healthcare less dependent upon surgery and opioids and less expensive, that's our goal, and we have a plan to do it. It's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. We have it all mapped out. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you're part of that plan, and the rest of you will all be part of that plan. So we're going to change healthcare, but we got to go, well, why do we got to change it? What's wrong with it? So we got to do a little bit of like report card time here and look at the condition of our country and our healthcare system. Is that okay? Okay. So I'm going to tell you, how did I get here? I got here because my background is not in chiropractic or even healthcare. My background was in business. I have a business degree. I worked for Dun & Bradstreet right out of college, Fortune 500 company. I was trained in sales on advertising. I worked for another company selling industrial cleaning chemicals and disinfectants to hospitals and schools. So I was all about sales and all about business, and I got injured. When I was 25 years old, I was walking with my wife on the beach. I was in a lot better shape than I am now. What you see down here used to be up here. And you know, I was a 25 stupid guy trying to impress a girl who I wanted to marry. So 25-year-old guys do stupid things. So I jumped up and hung from the thing they hang the lifeguard boats on. And I figured I'll hang here for a minute and she'll go, oh my God. And I'll drop down and she'll want to marry me. Well, I jumped up and that worked great. But when I dropped down and my feet hit the beach, I got struck by lightning. That's what it felt like. A bolt of lightning went through my body. I collapsed on the beach and I couldn't move. Now, I didn't know what it was. I know now it's called a stinger. And some of you are probably familiar with that. I was completely paralyzed. I couldn't move. I was having trouble breathing. I wouldn't let anybody. Luckily, I was with a physical therapist, my wife, who wouldn't let anybody touch me. And in about a minute, I started feeling my toes and my legs, and everything came back with a lot of pain. And I was like, what the hell do I do? Well, my wife's family, in her family, I'm not going to divulge any secrets here, but she has two vice presidents of two different pharmaceutical companies in her immediate family. Her sister's a nurse, her mother's a nurse, she's a PT, and then these two vice presidents. So I was getting advice from this family who cared about me, and they were like, you know, yeah, take the medication. Glad you went to the emergency room. Glad it wasn't broken. You know, I'll tell you that story. Doctor comes out and goes, we tell him the story, and he's like, starts whispering to somebody, and they come over with a headboard. And they started strapping me into a headboard. I'm like, I walked in here. But they were like, well, you think you broke your neck? Then they took a bunch of x-rays, and he says, good news, you didn't break your neck. Bad news, we don't know what the hell you did. So here's a bunch of medication, here's a list of doctors, good luck. So that's how I ended up here. I got tired of taking the medication. I was like, this isn't fixing something. Something popped in my neck. I know there's something wrong. I think I'm gonna go to a chiropractor. I said that at Easter dinner to my wife's family. And all the forks at the same time went, boom. What, are you crazy, a chiropractor? That's not a real doctor. But it worked, and that's how I got here. So I love chiropractic, but it evolved because I realized chiropractic by itself is not as powerful as chiropractic is with good medical care. And there's a big difference between medical care and good medical care. Let me show you. First of all, we're gonna be doing some training this weekend. How many ever heard of Hector Lamarck? Primerica? Like one of the richest guys in the world. And this is his quote. I have an embarrassingly good life because of the training. And if you listen to the interview, he's like, yep, we trained, my sales team and I trained and trained and trained, and every day we trained, there was nothing else to do, we trained, and they hated training, and I hated training, and we all got rich from it. Because training makes you smooth, and when you're smooth, you have confidence. When you have confidence, you do better. So we're gonna do a lot of training this weekend. But before we do, let's give the report card. How many of you ever got this book? Good. So I wrote this book 2 years ago. And I did a radio show for 4 years. I did it with a pharmacist. I did thousands of lectures all across the country. And I had all these stats in my head from reading book after book after book after book. When you do a radio show every week, you have to have a lot of fresh ideas in your head. So I just read and read and read. And finally, I was convinced by my partner to put these ideas down in a book. So I did, and I had a legal team researching all my stats. And we found out my stats were wrong. We found out that the stats that I had in my head got worse since I read the books. And everything's footnoted. I had an attorney recently just reach out to me, said, I'm using your book to go and argue cases because you have it so well footnoted. Like, really? So anyway, these are some stats from the book. So before I show any numbers, the United States makes up 4.2% of the world's population. 4.2%, that's not a lot. Here's the price tag for that 4.2% on healthcare. That is $3.3 trillion. If we took out all the walls in this space and all the walls next door and filled them full of $1,000 bills, we'd need two more buildings to even come close to that. That's ridiculous. That is more than the entire rest of the world combined. The United States, 4.2% of the world's population, outspends the entire rest of the world combined every year on healthcare. So if throwing money at healthcare would make it better, who would have the best healthcare in the world? US, okay? If you break it down, just to give you some reality, how expensive this is in smaller increments, it's $27 billion a month, $27.5 billion a month, $900 million a day, $37,500,000 every hour, $625,000 every minute, and $10,500 every second in the United States is spent on health care. What was it before the Affordable Care Act? It was $2.4 trillion. So the Affordable Care Act in 10 years made our healthcare system 30% more expensive. Who wrote that bill? Lawyers for drug companies. How do I know? I go to barbecues with executives of pharmaceutical companies. And just a side note, one of them is a vice president of research, and the question was asked at the last Zoom meeting, so you think they'll have a COVID vaccine out? And he goes, well, you don't want to ever be the first person to ever take a vaccine. I'd give it a couple years. Vice president of research, pharmaceutical company. So there's our price, that's what we're spending. Let's see how good it works. So this is according to the OECD, which is the Organization of Economic and Cooperative Development, and that is part of the United Nations. There are 35 countries in that group, and this group's job is to help the rest of the world come up to speed and be more civilized and more advanced. And one of the things they help in is healthcare. And the United States is the richest country in this group. Unfortunately though, we rank 29th in infant mortality out of the 35. Meaning, how well does a baby survive the first year of life? we're 29th place out of 35 countries. That's pathetic. When we count the rest of the world, there are third world countries where a baby has a better chance of surviving the first year of life than in the United States. That's disgusting. We are 26th in life expectancy out of the 35. 26th in life expectancy out of the 35. In 2017, 18, and 19, life expectancy in the United States dropped every year. The last time that happened was during the Spanish flu epidemic, which killed a million people. We're not doing so good, are we? When we start looking at the rest, the CDC says out of the 195 countries in the UN, the United States ranks 64th place. 64th place. And we pay more for that position than every other country in the world combined. So here's the analogy. Let's say we're all race car drivers, and we all have our own car. And you guys all find out that my car costs more than all of your cars put together. Are you a little nervous before the race? And then we do the race, and I take 64th place. And every time we do the race, I take 64th place. What would you tell me to do? Get the hell out of racing. Because I really don't know how to race. Unfortunately, that's our healthcare system. So I quoted, first of all, I have a passion for stopping the opioid crisis because I had to rescue more than one family member, one that was close to death. And he had to live with me for a couple years to come out of that and break that. And he was prescribed the opioid for an ankle injury on a skateboard. So opioids are just way out of control. That 4.2% of the world consumes 80% to 90% of the world's opioids. Now that includes illegal opioids like heroin. And heroin's the number one illegal opioid. That amount of opioids means that the United States has the highest drug overdose rate in the world. 4.2% of the population. We have a higher drug overdose rate than South America. 80% of street opioid use came from a prescription. 80% came from a prescription. I had a doctor say, I read your book. He was a pain management doctor and he was prescribing opioids. You exaggerated the facts. A lot of those people on opioids are taking heroin. I'm like, you didn't read my book because you would have read that actually they got on heroin from a prescription. What is the prescription that gets them there? What's the number one diagnosis that results in an opioid prescription?
Back pain.
Every time I look at that, I go, I suck. That's in my wheelhouse, and they're beating the crap out of me. They're outselling me left and right. And they're outselling you left and right. And they're laughing. Did the opioid crisis get better or worse during COVID?
Worse.
These numbers are before that. Back pain is just one segment of chronic degenerative arthritis, the most common ailment suffered by human beings since Hippocrates' day. Let me say that again, because you're looking at me like, what? It's the most common ailment. Chronic degenerative arthritis is the most common ailment that mankind is afflicted with. So is arthritis an aging thing, or is arthritis an abnormal aging thing? How do you know that? Who said that? How do you know that? I agree with you. It's biomechanics. If it was a normal aging thing, all your joints are the same age, you would have equal arthritis in every joint. How often do you see that? Never. It's an abnormal thing. And we've gotten so used to it, we think it's normal. It's not normal to go through life like this. Here's the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. That's not normal. This is normal. How many of you know Jack LaLanne or heard of Jack LaLanne before he died? How old was he when he died? 96, I think, or 97. What did he do the day before he died? Push-ups, a lot of them. Guy was incredible. Where did he go to school? 1936? Chiropractic school. That's right. He was told, you better drop the Dr. Jacqueline Parter. We're going to put you out of business by the AMA. Suppression was happening back then. Why are we suppressed? Because we're bad? Did we hurt people? No, we're competition. We're competition, and they're organized, and we're not. So what am I doing? I'm organizing. That's why we have nurse practitioners here. We have any MDs in here today? We usually do, okay. But we have nurse practitioners in here. We have chiropractors in here. We have rehab staff in here. Any PAs? How about PTs? Okay, so it's mostly chiropractors and nurse practitioners. I'm organizing, but we have all those people working with us. Because when we do it separate, divide and conquer. That's what the pharmaceutical industry has done. When we get together, we have power. And our plan for the next 5 years is to have a group that is worth over $1 billion so we can stand up to a drug company or an insurance company with our lobbyists and pound them into the ground. That's the plan, and we're gonna do it. Opioids are the leading cause of death of Americans under the age of 50. The leading cause of death of Americans under the age of 50. Could you imagine what would happen to you if you're a chiropractor and they found out that chiropractic was the leading cause of death of Americans under the age of 50? Yet they're still prescribing, going, yeah, we're trying to control it. These people need that relief. Am I saying let everybody be in pain? No. Is there a time where there's a need for an opioid? Maybe. But it's never going to happen in any clinic I ever own. There's so many of them out there. Why do I want to add to that mess? But they made a mistake. It's not 70,000 a year because they forgot to count two groups. The people who die operating machinery, namely motor vehicles, while under the influence of an opioid, and the people who commit suicide because they're addicted to opioids. And when they added those numbers in 6 months ago, the new number is 150,000 a year. A year. And how many American soldiers died in 10 years in Vietnam? 55,000 in 10 years, and they were shooting at those guys. Here's 150,000 every year, and most of them are getting it from a prescription. Think we need to change? Well, here's one last part of this report card. How many of you have heard of Gary Null? Gary Null's a PhD, and he got a whole bunch of MDs and PhDs, and all they did was they studied existing medical studies published in medical journals. And they calculated the injury rate from healthcare. And this is only from healthcare delivered in a hospital setting, not in private practice and not in a nursing home. And somebody better tell one of the governors in New York what's the difference between a nursing home and a hospital. Anyway, so 2.2 million adverse reactions happen from a drug prescribed in a hospital every year in this country. 20 million people get prescribed an antibiotic when they don't have an infection in a hospital every year. 7.5 million people get unnecessary surgical procedures in a hospital every year. 9 million have unnecessary hospitalizations every year. 1.7 million people catch an infection in the hospital every year, and that wasn't what brought them to the hospital. They got it after they checked in. And 100,000 of those people die from an infection they caught in a hospital every year. That means the average death rate from hospitalization is between 800,000 and 1 million people every year, which makes going to the hospital the leading cause of death in the United States. That's our report card. And don't think, oh, that's not me. We're all in healthcare. We don't change it. We're just as responsible for those numbers as anybody else. Do you understand that? The only way you can change something is to accept responsibility for it. The only way you can change anything is to accept responsibility for it, and then you can change it. Do you understand that? That's what we're going to do. We're going to change this. There's not bad people in healthcare. Most of the people I've worked with in healthcare, which has been for the last 25 years, I've been integrated. The reason they went to school to learn to become a nurse practitioner or an MD or whatever, chiropractor, 80% of those people did that because they wanted to genuinely help people. And that's what we all have in common. We're here because we wanted to help people. You're in this room, it's because you wanted to help people, because we weed out the people that go, no, how do I make a lot of money? Eh, you might want to try another company. See, if you take care of your patient, the money will follow you. If you chase the money, the patients will run away. That's the way it works. So we need to change this. And I've thought about this a lot. And a couple, probably over a decade ago, I realized the biggest difference between medical, and this is probably more like 2 decades, and chiropractic is the way we think. That's what I originally thought. Then I realized a lot of chiropractors think the wrong way as well. So I came up with this thing that I'm going to show you, and I started showing it to patients, and they love it. So every time I ever do a lecture, which I don't do a lot of lectures to patients anymore, but when I do, I put this in it. If you go into the clinic, you're going to see this. So it's called the disease timeline. And this is to just change our thought process. If we need to change those stats, you guys all agree we need to change those stats? Okay. Would you agree to change anything? You have to have a viewpoint shift? Here's the first viewpoint shift. If this was a timeline of disease, this is the day it starts, and this is all the stuff that happens, and this is the day it ends, what happens on that day? Okay, that's the first viewpoint we have to change. Thank you, Ken. You heard me say this before, though. So I'm going to be honest with you. I asked that question to over 50,000 healthcare practitioners, and so far, not including him, because he heard it before, four people said you get better. Everybody else said you die.
And I answered the same
way. So did I. It's not a natural thing where you just get a disease and die. If you buy into that, then it makes sense to give you a drug to make you feel good while you're dying. We got to realize, we have a body. God gave us a body that can heal, but he didn't give us a manual. You have to get that on your own. And who's going to help? We're going to help. We're going to educate people. Look, let me finish this and you'll understand what I'm saying. Let's look at this end of the spectrum. Do you know the day the disease starts? In most cases. No. What do you have to experience to know you have something wrong? A symptom. So when you get that first symptom in most diseases, does it usually occur in the first half or the second half of disease? Second. Now, we're in healthcare. When I ask lay people, what do they say? Up until about 8 years ago, they all said first half. Now, in the last 8 years, the last 10 years, they're all saying second. Not all, but most of them are saying second half. What changed? The internet? The internet's like anything else. It's like fire. If you don't know how to use it, you can burn yourself. But if you know how to use it, you can heat your house, you can make your car work, you can fly on a plane using fire under control. And that's the internet. People are going to the internet and they're learning a lot of stuff that they were not getting from their doctors. Right? So you get a disease and you ask this question to people and you're going to have some people, no, you know right away. So I don't try to discredit people when I talk to them. I just give them more stats. So here's what you can give them. So role play with me. You're a bunch of lay people. And I just said, first half or second half? And most of you said first half. And I'll say, well, you know, that's how most people answer. But let me give you a couple statistics and I'll ask that question again. What is the leading cause of death officially in the United States? Heart. 750,000 Americans, 700,000 Americans on average every year die of heart disease. 350,000 of those people all had the same first symptom. What was it?
Heart attack.
The heart attack that killed them. First symptom showed up right there in half of the leading cause of death in the United States. Second leading cause of death. Cancer. Raise your hand if you knew somebody had cancer. Raise your hand. I want to see. Raise your hand if you don't know somebody had cancer. Isn't that pathetic? See, back like 40 years ago, it was 1 in 40 people. Now it's 1 in 3 get cancer. So can you have tumors and not have a symptom? For how long?
Years.
So you're lucky if the symptom shows up in the last 10%. And what do when we get a symptom? We cover it up. That's what opioids are. Do they do anything to fix the patient? They just cover up the pain. So the reason we have the most expensive, ineffective healthcare in the world is because we treat right here, and what do? We try to cover up the symptom. What we really need to do is functionally correct the patient, whether it's through functional medicine or whether it's through physical functional medicine, which is what you're going to learn this weekend. Right? Physical functional medicine does an awful lot. You know the triangle. You got the mental, the chemical, and the structural. And they all feed into each other. And somebody's got a chemical imbalance, you can actually start exercising and change that chemical imbalance. Am I right? You can have mental stress. You ever go to a job interview and you start sweating? That's a physical response to a mental stress. So they work together, and we start working together as allied healthcare professionals. We can tap into a lot of these things and get people well. The best thing you can do for your patient, according to my nurse practitioner, is get them to exercise and get them to eat better. What's the best cure for heart disease? Exercise and diet. What's the best cure for cancer? Exercise and diet. Now, if you get cancer, you might have to do more extreme things, but if you exercise and diet, everybody I know that survived cancer said, I radically changed my diet and I started exercising like crazy, because you change the hormone balance in your body, and that's usually what causes cancer. So the best thing you can do for your patients is to get their physical posture and physical ability back so their body functions better. Would you agree? And chiropractic has to be part of that, because the weight-bearing joints, sacrum to occiput, are loaded with proprioceptors, and that's what tells your brain what to do. You're constantly giving information to your brain from how you are in space. You do this, your brain has to calculate, I don't want him to fall over, so I'm going to tighten certain muscles up so he doesn't fall over. Play catch, catch a ball, put it in his hand. If I didn't have that ability, I would fall right over. When I went to catch it, I'd fall forward. So your brain relies on the information that comes into it from your physical motion and posture. So if somebody has a compromise to their physical motion and posture, what's it going to affect? Their brain. My wife is a PT who specialized in traumatic brain injury and stroke rehabilitation. When she first saw chiropractic and actually saw it, first when I said I was going to go, she's like, no, they're not real doctors. But then when she saw it, she's like, oh crap, this is what I'm doing, except they're doing it on the spine. And her analogy was, these are the guys that are programming the keys on the keyboard to the brain. And all of a sudden she went, these are the most important doctors in the world. I think I'll marry this guy. So it worked out. When you're correcting somebody, if you treat them till the symptom's gone, it's just as bad. You have to have a way to measure outcomes that does not depend upon pain. Because does everybody have the pain, same pain threshold? Who has a higher pain threshold, men or women? Absolutely. I watched four babies come out of my wife and I'm like, thank God I'm a man, thank God I'm a man. Then I passed out. So you have to keep going until you get to maximum medical improvement. And you have to have a way to measure that. That's what we're going to try to teach you, some of you, this weekend. So there's three different things we're doing this weekend. Four, actually. And one of them is going to be doing the rehab, and we're going to be teaching that, and then teaching how to document that. We're also doing sales training, which is important, because if you're going to pay for your expansion, you have to have a higher income coming in. So I'm going to teach the sales class today. We're also going to do a boot camp. How do you process somebody through the office? You know, we're going to, a small group of you are going to be with my office managers and my executive director of this clinic, teaching you how they process somebody through the first 4 days. And then, I think that's everything. Oh, and marketing. Colleen's going to teach marketing. So the people who are doing sales today are going to do marketing tomorrow. So we got a whole weekend action-packed with you, and we also have a couple of guest speakers who are going to pop in and talk sometime today. Right now, I just want to show you the other side of the coin. Most of you are new. You're not all new. Some of you are veterans here, but we are not a regenerative medicine company. I've been doing this long before I was doing regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is just a tool that we added to our tool belt, which is how you should be marketing. Not your tools, what the patient has. And Colleen will get into that with you. But what can these tools do? We all know what chiropractic can do. Raise your hand if you're a chiropractor and you had a miracle happen in your career, right? Every hand go up, because you all had them. So regenerative medicine also can create some miracles. So a couple things you need to know about that. I mean, that's the potential of what you're using. Now everybody goes, well, what did they use? They used adipose, which was the most common form of regenerative medicine 6 years ago. But the FDA said, oh, no, that's experimental. You're over-manipulating, so that's a drug. So we can't do that one anymore. But they can do it because they're a research facility trying to make a drug. You need $25 million to get the license to do that. If you advertise stem cell therapy, you will be saying, I have a $25 million research license, and the FDA shows up at your door and you don't have that license, you're going to be paying a lot of money. So you got to know how to market this. This is, the drug companies hate this. They don't want people to get this. So there's a lot of traps out there, and most of the traps are in marketing, which is why we started teaching a marketing course. And the rules change. We used to be able to say the word stem cells 5 years ago, not today. You say stem cells, somebody's going to show up at your house or your office. The only way you can use the word stem cells is if you're talking from a science point of view of this is what's usually in these types of tissues and this is how they work in your body naturally, which is how our talk is. How many of you have looked at our talk? Yeah, so it's worded very carefully. You got to make sure you're not saying you're doing stem cell therapy or you're not, there's stem cells in this needle. You say typically in human cellular tissue products, there are types of things like cytokines, growth factors, stem cells. Is that in here? I don't know. They typically are, and our results are, and you can say that. We see this type of result. This is how many people respond to our treatment. I mean, amazing things. Not just with this, but with the chiropractic and with the rehab. All of it together means you have a phenomenal result for your patient, and they're going to tell everybody they know. All right? So if you're new at this and you're struggling with the marketing, it's because the COVID-19, nobody saw that coming. But as we're coming out of it, which we are, when you start getting patients in and they get well and they start telling other people, you will have a line at your door. When I sold my practice in Pennsylvania for the first 12 months, the medical doctor who bought it didn't spend a dime on marketing, didn't even have a marketer. And at the end of that year, we calculated he averaged 8 new patients a week for the year. All referral, all word of mouth. So that's what you're going to create when you put this together.